Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
True Crimers, welcome to Break the Case. I'm your host, I'm Jen Coffendaffer. Thank you everybody for being here. I know it's been a long day for those of you who have been watching the John O'Keefe case, the trial of Karen Reed. She's charged with second degree murder, manslaughter, and leaving the scene of an accident resulting in death. And today was just a really big day. Actually, I thought ARCA was going to be on all day. They ended up doing only a half a day, as we all saw. And, you know, just very interesting how everything ended. We are going to break that down with my guest. Also today was Ian Whiffen. He's brilliant. He is Cellebrite, I mean, basically. He developed some of the programs that individuals use, kind of wrote the book on it, and is certainly so good. So I thought that his testimony went great, but we'll break that down a little bit. But what I really want to get in today is the ARCA voir dire. That is really what I want to focus on. As many of you know, this case is about Karen Reed, who's charged with essentially being drunk and hitting purposefully, in a sense, at least backing up, and should have known that if she struck somebody, they would likely die. That's the second degree murder back in January of 2022. Defense argues, no, he actually went into the house and was beat up by an ATF agent, a 30-year vet of the Boston Police Department, a dog, and a minor, although they're not going to bring the minor part in anymore because Judge Cannone said no more of that. But I have a super special guest I want to bring in. You know, when you're thinking about who to ask to join, particularly in this kind of a discussion, you want somebody with an amazing background. Let me tell you a little bit about our guest's background. 27 years as a LA County public defender, 27 years. That is being in the thick of it. This isn't a small jurisdiction. Obviously, LA County is huge. He was involved in over 140 trials, folks. That's a lot of litigating, and that's a lot of experience. He was also a prosecutor at the DA's office in LA. And that's also very important to me because it shows that he understands sort of both sides of the coin. He also has been an advocate, law degree from Whittier, just a great well-rounded guy. He speaks German and he can sing also. Please help me welcome, I know you're not going to clap per se, but welcome to the stage, Philip Dubé. Can you hear me, Philip?
I can hear you loud and clear, Jennifer. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, I want to jump right into this. I know you had a chance to watch the testimony. Philip told me he was eating popcorn and having chocolate. It was like, perfect.
It was drizzle.
Oh, drizzle. Oh, my gosh. Oh, yeah. Popcorn with drizzle. Oh, God.
Absolutely. That's my favorite.
Oh, that's great. But a lot happened today, and it's, I think, would be easy for us to start at the end, but I don't want to do that. Let's go to the beginning and really talk about, first of all, why Judge Cannoni allowed a voir dire when she really didn't want to have one. What do you think changed her mind?
Well, first of all, remember, the defense was under a court order under the Massachusetts reciprocal discovery rules to turn over everything in their possession relating to any witnesses and experts that they intend to call in their case in chief. That's just a standard PAT requirement in criminal law. In most states in the United States, we have it out here in California as well. We call it reciprocal discovery, where both sides have a duty to turn everything over. And what does that mean? It means you cannot just selectively go through, redact, omit, and modify what it is you feel will help your side and turn over the rest to the other side. It doesn't work that way because the goal is to get to the truth. And the only way to get to the truth is to be fully informed about what your witnesses and your experts are going to say. And here there was an issue as to whether or not the defense had turned everything over to the prosecution regarding the ARCA experts, specifically Dr. Wolf and Dr. Rentschler. And I think what Mr. Brennan thought was still outstanding was a bunch of text messages. Maybe there were redactions to the overall report. Maybe there was some billing invoices that were missing, and he wanted to get to the bottom of it. Because remember, in the end, in the final analysis, Jen, the selling point to the jury in the first trial was the impartiality of ARCA experts because they were retained and they were ongoing vendors of the federal government. So therefore, if they are federal vendors, their word is gospel. Whatever they say must be, in fact, rooted in scientific reliability. That's the issue. And jurors have a tendency to really glob on and latch on, not just to scientific evidence, but also where there's sort of federal advocacy and federal use of those experts. Because let's face it, it is the supreme law of our land. When you are federal, it means that you are sort of the at the top of the mountain, so to speak. And juries love it, and they lend a lot of credence to it. Now, having said that, if you don't turn it all over, it looks like you're hiding something. And I think Hank Brennan was tipped off that there might be things omitted, missing, and he wanted it all. But what really tipped him off, I think, was the fact that there were still billables. He could not understand why, if the feds had already paid for their representation and they had done all the work, why is money still going out to these defense experts? And it gives the impression that their testimony and their opinions are being bought. So I think Hank wanted a hearing to voir dire these experts and get to the bottom of it and find out what, if anything, is still outstanding in terms of being turned over. What, if anything, was billed? Why weren't certain things billed? And what you did bill, why was it billed? And if that's the case, did you turn all that over to the prosecution? And if you didn't, the judge can impose a sanction. And we call it in criminal law the doomsday sanction, which is exclusion of the evidence. You can actually shut down the testimony and not let it in. It's an extreme remedy, but it has been done.
You know, Philip, that was a great recitation of essentially, and I'm going to just now narrow this down in layman's. Listen, if you're in trial, you have to turn over everything to the defense, and the defense has to turn over everything to you. And there was a huge question about that in terms of, I agree with you, billing and what exactly the agreement was with the defense. But I got to tell you, Philip, and I want to hear what you have to say. After that, voir dire, I don't feel any better about it. But maybe we'll have opposing thoughts on this. What did you think about, first of all, Hank Brennan's examination of Dr. Wolf?
Well, I thought he started off kind of slow, and then he gradually kind of came in for the kill, so to speak. But in the end, if you're really going to come in for the kill, you better hit a home run. Because when you're at that season finale, and in the end, you've got a nothing burger, you look like a buffoon, frankly. And you're really going on a fishing expedition in hopes of finding something. But I got to tell you, based on what I've seen thus far, and I know we're still in the middle of this hearing, they've turned over everything that they had in their possession. And if we're really honest, it seems like the stuff that needed to be turned over was more about, you know, airline tickets to get them to court, the time that's going to be needed in court, where they're going to stay when they get there, their ground transportation. And those are expenses that are not out of pocket. In other words, the defense bears the burden, if you will, of paying for all that to get the experts there because they don't work for free. Now, the good news is all the work had already been done. Remember, when the federal government was looking into this entire crime and they were investigating whether or not there may have been some corruption and civil rights violations, the DOJ contracted with ARCA to do sort of a reenactment, if you will, and to try to simulate what occurred. And they did that. They have their own forensic garage where they did it all. The bottom line is they turned over the report. The testing did not have to be redone. All of the accident reconstruction was in. The only thing outstanding was getting these experts into court for the defense in the state court prosecution. And that comes at a premium, meaning you pay for their time, you pay for their transportation, you pay for their lodgings and maybe their meals while they're in town. But that is small potatoes in comparison to what it costs to do the underlying reconstruction, the analysis, and the report writing. All of that was done. What's unusual about this case, Jen, it is almost unheard of for the defense to borrow work product from the federal government, particularly from federal prosecutors, to use in a state defense case in chief. I've never seen it ever in my career. And it raises a host of questions. First of all, do you have legal conflicts of interest? What do you do with the TUI regulations? We can get into that. In other words, do these experts even have the right to just single-handedly turn it over to state defense attorneys without permission from the DOJ? No, you have to go through a process because remember, you're just a contract vendor and you're obliged to follow the federal code of regulations. Otherwise, A, you can lose your contract and B, you might be committing a crime yourself without that imprimatur of the department head for the DOJ.
Well, it seems certainly that Dr. Wolf understood that. He understood that he couldn't just hand it over. He knew he was in certain terms that he could not just turn it over and that he did some inquiry. But where I have the biggest problem, and again, my standpoint here is speaking as an expert witness. Wow. I'm sorry, but I had a lot of issue with whether he was being truly candid in his answers. And this is why. And Philip, you've gone through a lot of trials. I don't know how many times you've had an expert. How many times have you needed to have an expert? None? Some? Never?
Hundreds. Hundreds.
And okay, you know, good. Jennifer,
oftentimes I get an expert and I don't like the result. I've got to bury the report. I can't call the expert to the stand. They don't always come with good news for your client. So what do? Maybe you find another one or you take a deal and settle the case.
Right. Perfect. This is exactly why I wanted you, because what he said made zero sense to me. And I believe he was locked in when initially on the stand. Have you ever had any conversations with us? No. Do we have any agreement with you fiduciarily? No. He locked himself in that basically he hadn't even met Alan Jackson, which is what Brennan was trying to get to, because Brennan's been around the block too. You've been around the block. I've been around the block. I have never taken the stand in a trial, in a hearing, or in a deposition where I didn't talk to my prosecutor or to the defense attorney, whichever one. I do about half and half. Mm-hmm. In other words, they're going to want to go over your report. You submit the report to them. You're going to want to go over those details, anything that they're confused about. Now, it's not up for negotiation. If you're a legitimate expert, you know, that person can't go to you and say, I need you to switch that or redact that. That's not going to happen.
That's a felony. That's a felony out here.
Exactly. Yeah. But this is my point, is that you discuss it and there's nothing nefarious about that. That's the bizarre part. To me, he was painted in a corner because he had already testified in her court, hadn't even met the guy. And so he had to keep that line. But for me, in watching his body language, watching his head go down, how he looked, how he was so evasive in answering, particularly when Brennan talked to him, I just, don't feel comfortable at all, in my opinion, that he was being honest and forthright, Wolf, about their relationship.
Well, I can tell you that he was sitting there pursing his lips and wetting his lips an awful lot because he was pretty nervous there in the hot seat. This was not a cross-examination about the science, about how he reached his findings. This really dealt with his objectivity and his truthfulness and his candor to the court and to the parties. Because if you think about it, Jennifer, anytime you put an expert on the stand, their opinion should not be bought and paid for. It should be rooted in science, and they speak objectively based on science, based on literature, based on peer review, and based on input from other experts in the field, not just domestically, but also internationally. And if you can kind of tailor the opinion and the testimony just to fit your storyline and your narrative, that is perpetrating a fraud on the court. And I think Hank Brennan probably thought that these experts were trying to pull a fast one for a quick buck from the defense. But I think what did it for me that told me that they really were not pulling a fast one is that they weren't redoing the testing. In the end, the final work product was their report. It was their accident reconstruction. Nothing had changed with respect to whether or not the injuries were caused by a car, and whether or not the damage to the car, if any, was caused by hitting John O'Keefe. If that has not changed and everything is rooted in kinematics, kinetics, and biomechanics, then you know what? You take the stand and you tell your story to the jury. But when you start hiding the ball about who retained you, how much you're getting paid, what this money is for, and you start Mickey Mousing your billables and you start saying, well, I don't get paid for it. Well, maybe the firm does, but yet I'm still documenting my time. You say, halt, wait a minute. Why are you billing $23,000? It can't be for a cab and a plane ticket to come to court. Where are you coming up with this number from? And I think it's a fair question because remember, the goal is objectivity, not subjectivity as to an opinion for a fee. You want to make sure that they remain impartial and objective.
Well, I agree with you on everything you said. But the problem is, as you probably know, if you're going to have communications with the attorneys you work for, which there should be some limited communication, I was actually trying to think back about text messages. And I think in all these years, I've maybe exchanged 12 text messages. And it was probably call me or the report's done. Never any 100 messages. Never in the world would I ever use the Signal app for a client that has hired me. That is absolutely over the top. That's encrypted messaging for those who don't.
Who's kidding who here? Obviously, they're getting down to the facts of the case and what is expected by way of testimony. Otherwise, why would you delete it? If you have nothing to hide, like, you know, what time can you be here? What time can you take my call? Maybe we can do dinner sometime. Or have you ever testified before? That kind of stuff. It's just so generic. We call it housekeeping matters that it can't hurt either side. And by the way, I can't even see a judge allowing it into evidence. No judge is going to allow this type of small talk pleasantries into evidence so a jury can just sit tight and listen to this nonsense. It's irrelevant.
It's irrelevant unless those text messages would have been relevant. In other words, if it would have proven that Alan Jackson, Yannetti, Little were not being honest to the court in everything we saw in the hearings, you know, where Judge Cannone was so upset. And I think Wolf knows that. He knew that he had to keep the party line in terms of what was discussed. That's what I believe. And it's based on years and years and years of experience, just like you. You put us both together. We're at 50, 60 years of experience, and this never happens. What about, have you ever used an encrypted app with any of your experts?
Never, ever, ever. By the way, I don't even know how to get them. I don't even know how to use them. One time I had a client, he was charged with criminal threats by sending threats via email to his victims. And the client used an email system called Hushmail. And it was owned by a company, I think, out of Canada called Hush Communications. And their marketing strategy is to send emails that are completely encrypted and are non-discoverable. They delete. So you can threaten somebody, you can threaten to blow up the place, you can threaten to kill them, and there's no digital trail of it anywhere. It just sort of dissipates in the ether like Primatene mist, you know? So how do you prove it? Well, they got evidence that he at least had an account there. And of course, the victims had proof that hush mail was coming to them. So when you connect the dots by inference, the jury can convict. And by the way, he went down like four slash tires, frankly. Okay. Yeah, he did.
And I did want to make a little bit of a correction. Signal cannot be used for top secret and secret like cases. That has to be Viper, or back in the day, we used another type of phone system that's hardwired. You literally had to go back to your office to make any calls like that. I sort of misspoke. What I'm talking about with Signal apps, not as a client in a expert case, but hired in another capacity, Signal can be used when you have matters that are sensitive, government sensitive. I shouldn't have said secret or top secret, government sensitive matters. And so for me, I've had to use that app when I've been hired in a different capacity other than an expert in that area or arena. My point is, you use it because you do not want those sensitive communications discovered.
Sure.
Period.
Yeah.
And so the thought of using them, though, as an expert in a court case, I can't believe it. And I was so glad Brenham asked that question, because we know that Karen Reed used it. We know that Turtle Boy used it. We know that this defense team uses it, because I think they're up to no good and nefarious, doing some nefarious dealings amongst each other. That's just my opinion based on what I've seen, because we've seen a lot. We've seen their messages. So anyway, let's get back, though, to Wolf and his statement about being paid. How in the world could an expert that is supposed to be as experienced as Wolf possibly think the federal government was going to pay his bill for Karen Reed's defense team?
Never. No, never. So what probably happened was the feds, on behalf of the DOJ or the U.S. Attorney's Office, sort of appointed them, if you will, or commissioned them based on a prearranged contract rate to do some testing, to do some recreations and simulations of how this whole thing could have occurred. And I think at the end of the day, in the final analysis, they were trying to find out if there was any local police corruption.
100%.
Remember, that's the only reason why the feds would get involved. The feds otherwise have no interest in investigating some state crime. You know, I mean, we have state murders, state arsons, state rapes, property crimes, financial crimes that go on every day here. And the feds have no interest in it because there's really no federal interest in the outcome. But if there is something that implicates violation of civil rights from a criminal standpoint, the DOJ will get involved and they'll look into it. And what do? They have to resort to experts as well, just like state prosecutors have to, because they're not conversant in it. And they're not competent to take the stand and testify. You know, so that's what they did. And they had a reputable firm. And I think, by the way, the firm stands for ARCA, stands for Accident Reconstruction Capabilities. I think that's what ARCA stands for. And they've been around for a long time. They're a very reputable firm. And part of their reputation is rooted in this idea that their time is billed by the hour. You know, anything they do has a billing code, taking a call, sending an email, doing an experiment, doing 3D type simulations, going out to the forensic garage, taking photos, whatever it is, everything has its own billing code. Travel time, court time, time maybe to go out to lunch, time for dinner, meeting with the client, whatever it might be, it all gets billed. And as an engineer with a firm who is not in private practice with their own shingle hanging out, they have to submit those billables to their managing partners or whoever runs the place. And we see that even in law firms. In fact, a lot of attorneys in these private firms, they're required to bill a certain number of hours annually to keep their job.
Exactly.
if you don't bill 1900 hours, they're going to call you in, have that friendly chat. Second time, they're going to write you up. And third time, you're going on unemployment. You're out the door. So they're obliged to bill their time, especially when there is work where they can bill their time. So to suggest that, well, they don't get paid for that, you know, they're just, you know, documenting their time. Who's kidding who? All of that time equates to dollars and cents that gets invoiced and billed to the client. But it goes back to what I said earlier. It sort of creates a conflict. The feds had them to represent the federal government in doing some type of testing and analysis at the federal level. To now use that same firm, their findings, their analysis to defend a defendant in state court, I think creates this quagmire, not just of financial conflicts, financial billings, but you also have ethical implications. How, on the one hand, can you have a federal civil rights unit now defending a named accused at the state level without the appearance of some type of a conflict of legal interest? And I just think it was a mistake. And if this ARCA firm thought that maybe getting $23,000, $24,000 was worth it, they might think again if this ever happens again in the future. Because like I said earlier, $23,000, $24,000 is not worth my bar card. Just not worth it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to piggyback off that a little bit, Philip, because not only were they allowed to use that, now the Commonwealth is really taking on federally paid resource and information and that report that was created and taking on the defense team. It's just really, I think, unheard of, especially when you think about TUI as well. But it was allowed the first go around, and I know we're talking about 23,000. I would submit we're talking probably in the 100 plus thousand now. Because remember, they've done more testing. Now they're under the gun to get everything done by May 7th. They are going to be putting in so many hours. There were three experts that were used initially. It seems we might be down to only two, maybe more, for them to get everything done, a new report written. I think there's so much money that's going to be put into this. And for him to say on that stand, he had no idea that it was going to be the defense paying. Remember, he says that at the end under re-examination by Alessi. Come on. And did Judge Cannone buy that?
I doubt it. But I seriously doubt it, because every minute that any engineer at an accident or a biomechanical engineering firm puts in on a case ultimately gets billed to the client. They're not documenting their time to make sure they're at work, to account for their time to show that they're actually showing up and performing. No, the reason why they're accountable for every minute is because every minute translates to dollars and cents that gets billed to a client. That's the only reason why they care. You know, and one other point, Jen, and that is there is likely a difference between the billing rate for the government client and the private client. The government client likely pays far less because there's a lot of repeat business, especially when you have experts that are on a panel that they get selected from for a court appointment. So they work at a reduced rate, but they get volume business all the time, as opposed to the private client, where they pay full price. I have no idea what Karen Reed's defense is paying by the hour for their time, but I'm telling you, it's not on the cheap. It is very expensive. Some of these guys can command $700-$800 an hour.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I will tell you, though, at the federal level, as a prosecution rate, it doesn't change. But I do agree with you. State, local, public defenders at those levels, that rate can be reduced. But typically at the federal rate, it's kept the same, at least just in my experience. But you're right, when it comes to private, they're not budging an inch. And I'm guessing for each of them, it's $600 an hour, $1,200. That's my educated guess, because they have PhDs. And I think that that is in the ballpark of what they are and were getting paid. I actually did I used that figure. I think I used the $600 figure, and I came up almost to the penny, considering travel and food and everything, to that $23,000 in 2 days on the first go around. Because remember, that was just for a couple of days. That was come in, sit around, testify, and go home. And that was $23,000.
Nothing. That's a lot of money.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So they're getting paid a lot. I want to talk really quick about something that Wolf said he does with his clients, which I'm not buying, never heard of this. And I think this was part of this text string that we'll never see, where he sends notes about what he should be asked and what to stay away from. Have you seen anything like that?
Never, never in my career. Ever. No. Now, what I have done and what I have seen is I will call an expert, maybe even email them and say, can you help me out with a sample direct or cross-examination that I can ask of you or the other side? You know, that kind of thing. Because remember, they're a consultant for the attorney. They're there to school us yes. on science. That's their job. That's what they're getting paid for. So they help me craft questions. But never, ever, ever would an honorable, objective expert say, look, I need you to stay away from this area of the science. I need you to stay away from this particular topic. Otherwise, it could end up hurting your client. No, you have to keep it open and fair game, full disclosure, so that if it comes up on cross, you're going to see that whenever you put an expert on, it's always going to have nuggets and warts for both sides. And you just got to take it as it comes and let a jury decide what value to give your direct and what value to give your cross. Because in the end, especially a case like this, everything's going to hinge on the battle of the experts anyway. So why not be honest about it? Just put it out there and let the jury decide which expert, if any, they believe.
You know, one of the things he said that just, I couldn't believe these words came out of his mouth, was about the fact that there are more pedestrian accidents that happen at night. And he said, you may want to stay away from it. And then he tried to legitimize this by saying, listen, I just didn't want the jury to think that it was more possible that Karen Reed could have hit him because it was night. I was thinking, but it was. Of course, you have less visibility. You had a blizzard. In other words, it could also help the defense if they weren't trying to be so lack of candorish about everything. I know that's not exactly a word, but you get what I'm saying. In other words, they could have been part of maybe the jury saying, oh, maybe she didn't see him. You know, maybe that's why. It could have helped them, but instead he was telling the defense, stay away from it. I've just never heard of anything like that.
Never, ever, ever. And frankly, if an expert ever did do that, I might actually have to make a tactical decision as to whether or not I even put them on.
Yes.
I mean, that's the remedy. It's just, oh, wait a minute. Now you're telling me something new that could hurt the client. Rather than tell them that's off limits, don't bring that up, don't answer any questions about that, don't put that in your report, I might have to think twice about even putting them on, because now they've touched upon something that could end up backfiring for the defense on cross-examination. And I might have to shop around and find somebody else that it didn't dawn on them to even bring it up. So that's how you fix it. But you don't tell the expert what, if anything, to say or not say. Otherwise, I hate to say it, that's tampering with a witness. It truly is a form of witness tampering. And you don't want to ever do or say anything that could influence testimony or an opinion. Because frankly, in addition to losing your bar card, it's a felony. And the last thing that I'm going to do is go to prison behind a defense for Karen Reed. There is no way, okay? No way. They're not going to haul me away in handcuffs. Never.
It's insane. And I've got to tell you what my expectation was today. I really thought Wolf and Rensselaer, and I think Rensselaer would have told the truth. I mean, I could see him. He was reluctant, but it seemed like he was going to be honest, just even with the simple question of, did you have lunch with Karen Reed? Did you meet him? Did you talk to him? And I thought it was funny. He said, well, I stood in the corner. But then when he was pressed, yes, I did. Yes, I did meet them. Yes, I did talk to them. Remember, Wolf said, nah, He never did. And I wanted Brennan so bad to ask Rentschler if Wolf talked to Reed, because I thought if he says she did, which I think he probably did, that would have just really blown his credibility. But the judge cut it off very early. Why do you think that happened?
Well, first of all, there's nothing scheming or foxy about having lunch with your client.
No, exactly.
You know, remember, Karen is their client in the end. It's just that they were commissioned by her counsel. But in the end, they are there on behalf of Karen Reed. There is nothing wrong with meeting with the client. And frankly, sometimes you have to meet with the client to get more details to render an opinion. We see this, for example, in the drug cases, the DUI cases, where you need to render an opinion maybe about the driving patterns, the intoxication of the driver. Well, included in that necessarily is to find out what, if anything, they may have consumed. Can you tell me what you drank? What time did you drink? Did you eat anything before or after? Sometimes the expert needs to know these eating patterns to render an opinion. And the same thing goes with car accidents. But it sounds like they did not want the experts to interview Karen about the facts because they might have to include them in the report. And they didn't want to be accused of having to redact anything that could have hurt her. So instead, they would rely on objective data, objective criteria like the EDR, the event data recorder, the measurements that were taken by the cops at the scene, photographs, their own simulation that they did in their own forensic garage without actually talking to the client. And sometimes it's a way to reach a conclusion and a helpful opinion without incriminating your client or otherwise undermining your opinion. Because again, what would happen is you'd have to shop around and find another expert and start all over.
No, I agree, Philip. It's not a big deal. And I love the caveat you just gave about, you know, not wanting to mix their raw data with something that the client had told them. Karen, my point was, and I think this was Brennan's point, is just lying about every little detail. Remember, he said, no, I didn't meet Alan Jackson, but then he said he did. And then, you know what I mean? And then also, I think that comes into question because he erased 100 texts, right? Sometimes what people do about something that isn't a big deal is far worse than they talk to the client and they, you know, exchange text messages. So it, to me, it's just the point of, is this person telling the truth about everything or are they lying about everything?
Yeah, it calls their credibility into question. Remember, right now they are before the court and they owe a duty of candor to the court about whether or not there was complete reciprocal discovery and obeyance to the discovery orders to turn everything over to both sides. That was the issue at that point. Did they comply? And remember, the remedy for noncompliance, first of all, you can be held in contempt, you can be sanctioned, and the ultimate doomsday sanction is to exclude the evidence. And frankly, Hank Brennan would be salivating over that remedy because he can keep their experts off the stand, you know, but I sincerely doubt that she will do that. What she will probably do is come back and say, I found Dr. Wolf less than credible in certain aspects. I found it unbelievable that he didn't have a good excuse for not preserving these texts, but I don't find that they did not turn over substantive opinions and findings and reports to the defense. So therefore, I'm going to allow it in, and this entire line of inquiry is admissible on cross-examination. That's how she'll cure it. So now what's going to happen is all of this inquiry, all of this voir dire that kind of called into question their credibility is going to be brought out at the trial. That's what's going to happen.
And to your point, and I agree with you about the Signal app, when he says, well, it wasn't in my possession. I mean, to me, that's just an out and out lack of candor, not being honest with the court. Oh, we didn't. The reason you're telling us about it right now is because Brennan asked you. But other than that, when the court said all communication in your possession, they're using that word possession to say, see, I didn't really need to do it because it's not in my possession. I can tell you that Signal app is in your possession. I mean, it's downloaded on your computer. You have it. There's messages there that you can see. They're like text messages.
Well, let me tell you what's going to happen as a result of this. We are going to see a massive sea change in the United States in criminal trials, where defense counsel and prosecutors are going to go into court and ask for what's called a preservation order, meaning that if either side is going to get an expert, that they are ordered at the time of the appointment or retention of the expert not to purge, destroy, or otherwise delete any communications or use any type of applications where they will self-delete or self-purge. Because if they do, the court can find that it's a discovery violation and exclude the evidence for violating the preservation order. That's what's going to happen as a result of this. Because now a light's going to go on with all these attorneys across the country saying, oh my goodness, I wonder how many experts I have had over the years, I've had to cross-examine where all these communications got deleted because it never dawned on me to ask for something that could have been purged. It's kind of like, do you remember Snapchat? You can take a photo, that kind, and all of a sudden the whole photo just disappears. It just vaporizes like Primatene mist. You know, where does it go? Somewhere in the ether, just all the particulate is off into the galaxy, you know, so you have nothing to turn over. But the court can cure it by telling people or the parties not to purge anything or to set up this type of encrypted communications from the date of appointment forward.
You know, I'm going to say, and I know you, I think you agree with this from what you've said, Philip, is that no decent expert worth their salt that is credible even thinks like that. You turn down clients. In other words, you will let them know. I'll give you an example. One time I was approached, by a client. Listen, we have a case involving multiple taser uses multiple times of the taser. And, looked everything over. I got back with them and I said, listen, taser 1, 2, and 3 were good. 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8. I can't support that. And that's what I'm going to say. And you know what they said? Oh my gosh, thank you. We can't use you because you're not going to justify all those tasing uses, but we're keeping you because they actually, good attorneys, they want their experts to be clean and just tell the truth. And sometimes you have to put things in that aren't necessarily great for your client. But I tell you what, you put it in there and it shows how objective you are because nothing's ever going to be perfect for one side. There's always going to be some mistakes. You put those in there, you tell the truth, and it only makes you look more objective, which you should be.
Exactly. And it also makes you look more objective to a jury because in the end, they are the final arbiter of which way to vote. And if you come off as being skeevy and slimy and unctuous and no good and mendacious, then a jury is going to hurt your client with their verdict. And you always want to avoid that. The last thing you ever want to be accused of is slipping an expert a few extra billable hours or a little payola to change their opinion or to kind of modify it a little bit that has a defense bent to it, if you know what I'm talking about. It is not worth it. Frankly, no lawyer would ever do that I know of, and no expert would, because our credentials are worth far more than that. There's an old expression in criminal law, if I don't close this deal, I don't eat. And I want to be able to eat in the future, not just be based on this one court appointment. It's not worth it.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. And it's just, I think that's why for me, I'm so incensed overall about this case. People have said, Jen, you just when you talk about this case compared to Idaho, which is really, the number one case I follow, or Sebastian Rogers, another case that has my passion, that I talk differently, that I'm more adamant, perhaps. And I am, I think, from this standpoint, I've seen so much sleaze in this deal. It's just, I always call it my pigsty case, because no matter who steps in it, you're going to get slimed. You're going to get garbage on you. And this is why I chose this attire, by the way, Philip. It's black and white. It's the most polarizing case Well, really?
It looks like the old do not go to jail on the Monopoly keyboard. Okay, that's more apropos. Do not go to jail. Do not pass go.
Exactly right. That little suit he's wearing. Oh, my God. All right. Well, that too. But I thought of it because it's just that's how this case is. And if you come into a string, hopefully not here, you know, I tell my mods, please let everybody have an opinion as long as it's not, you know, swearing and cussing and just ridiculous. Let everybody on. And then on my Twitter, too, the comments that I hide slash erase or I mean, block. I can't believe what people say. It's shocking to me, like that you even use the C word every other word. It's so weird.
Yeah. No, I get a lot of tawdry, vulgar comments myself. You know, I don't know what it is that makes the Twitter forum such an angry one. You know, I honestly don't. I don't know what brings that out of people. You know, we call it the CEO of the basement. You know, that kind of guy, you know, the keyboard cowboy just sitting there in mom's cellar, you know, typing whatever they feel like. And it looks like they're really at a hard day's work, making a good living. But in truth, they have nothing better to do than go incognito and trash people. You know, if you want to be a cyber bully, live your life, have at it. But it's not going to silence us, Jen. It will never muzzle us ever.
Yeah, it's so ridiculous. But yeah. But certainly when I blame Brian Netton. Every time I talk to him, I'm like, this is all your fault, because he kept saying during Gabby Petito, you got to get a Twitter account. I had a Twitter account. I just never used it. It was to track my son who played football, never wrote one thing on it until Gabby Petito, you know. And I really do enjoy it, though, I have to say, because my mind is so engaged with so many of the good people. Like, they're so interesting to me, and they have the same passion about true crime and about these cases. And Twitter knows before, a day and a half before mainstream media knows. That's just facts. It's so unbelievable. I go to Twitter before I ever look on the news.
Oh, yeah. I learn a lot from Twitter followers. I cannot tell you. And by the way, you know what else I learn a lot about? New words. Oh, I love new words. And when I see a new word, a new idiom, I actually write it down and add it to my lingo library. And I'll actually send a reply to you. Thank you. That's a great word. That's a great expression. So there are a lot of people who really do educate us out there.
Yes.
And not only that, they give us some interesting perspectives based on their takes of evidence and cases and just life in general. It gives you fodder for thought, food for thought, you know? But then, of course, you always get those wise asses, if you will, those wise crackers that kind of just chime in with obnoxious, tawdry, rude, nasty profanity. You know, what are you going to do? It is what it is. And unfortunately, the owner of that entire platform feels that there is sort of a tort right to freedom of speech as opposed to a constitutional one. And it's a free forum. Say what you want. If you don't like it, then just close your account or block them, whatever you can, or hide them, you know? So it is what it is. But I've learned over time that a lot of it's quieting down. They like to get a rise out of you, but eventually it starts to settle, and they might actually start becoming a little enriched and start listening and learning from us. And rather than silence us and humiliate us, they're using us as a reference for their own lives.
Yeah, it's a very interesting world out there. But getting back to ARCA, just so we kind of close the loop on ARCA, what do you think? You've already pretty much said in a nutshell, you think everything's going to come in. They might get a little slap on the wrist. Why do you think Judge Cannone just all of a sudden shut down Brennan and said you can briefly ask Rentschler a couple of questions, which was like 5 minutes, and just completely shut it down and then went to sidebar? What do you think happened?
I think she had heard enough. And there is a very fine line between needing what is probative on the issue of reciprocal discovery orders being violated and now just sort of trying to shame and humiliate people on the witness stand in her court. Remember, in the end, she is there to also control the nature and order of her own proceedings and not turn her courtroom into a kangaroo court. And at some point, the evidence is in. She has heard enough to make her ruling. And all you're doing now is just sullying people and their reputations for the cameras. So she shut it down. I think she's heard enough. She's going to allow it in. But I do believe that she's also going to allow some of this impeachment in on cross-examination. That's how you remedy it. That really is how you fix it. The last thing you want Cannone to do is exclude these two doctors' testimony, because if Karen goes down on these charges, it's coming back on appeal. There is no way that a higher court is going to excuse exclusion of these experts based on today's proffer, based on today's voir dire.
I agree with you. I do want to say, though, do you think she'll limit what they're allowed to be asked in terms of, like you said, do you think she's going to let Brennan beat him up? Because we clearly saw the tough side of Hank today.
Well, you know, look, at some point, the questions, even on cross, become cumulative. They become redundant. You keep repeating yourself. At some point when you've made your point, the judge can shut it down and say, asked and answered, Mr. Brennan, move on to the next question. And she might chime in to the point where the jury's going to start wondering, well, why does this guy keep repeating himself? Why does the judge have to then step in to rein him in? And it could backfire on Hank. So in a way, I hate to say it, I think the judge is doing him a favor and letting him know what the coming attraction is in front of a jury should he pull this same thing during the trial. So in a way, it kind of serves him. He'll make his point. He'll argue in his closing and let the chips fall where they may.
Another point I wanted to talk about was the experts, and I guess maybe I have a different view on this than you. I know you think, or you mentioned, at least in this case, perhaps, and maybe in all your cases, that you think the experts are really important, that it, I think your words were, it hinges on the experts. I don't think it does in this case. I think if you put an expert on and you don't have a counter expert, that's where you're in big trouble. But I think oftentimes these experts sort of cancel each other out. And I know in listening to the jurors from trial one, several of them said, we kind of just disregarded it. You know, it wasn't a big thing to us. And then, but in social media, if you look, that's what everybody's hanging their hat on. It couldn't have happened. It couldn't have happened, right? So where do you think, because you just briefly said hinges on, did you mean generally or with this trial?
Generally. In this particular case, I don't think you need an expert to say that the damage to the car was or was not caused by striking John O'Keefe. I don't think you need an expert to say whether or not his injuries are consistent with getting hit by a car. You know, the definition of expert opinion is one in which it is based upon facts and evidence that is beyond the common experience of lay people. I think a juror, a lay juror, can look at an injury and say, ah, that came from getting hit by a car. And likewise, I don't think it's beyond the common experience of lay jurors to, based on their rational perceptions, look at the taillight and say, this could be caused by hitting somebody. You don't need an expert to say that. If you really think about it, it's almost like they're talking down to jurors. What do you think, we're idiots? We can see whether or not a car hit somebody. We can see whether or not the damage to that vehicle could be caused by that impact. We don't need an expert to tell us. You're going to take up 3 or 4 days of our time, our precious time, at a whopping $10 or $15 a day for something that we can rationally sort of perceive on our own without the expert.
Uh-oh, Philip, did I lose you? Uh-oh, everyone in chat, can you hear me? Or we lost Philip somehow. I'm going to bring him out of the audience and then bring him back in. Oh, shoot, it must be his internet. Can everyone hear me? Yeah, thumbs up. Yeah, we lost Philip. Oh, my gosh. Well, hopefully he'll come back. Let's see if he's going to come back. Let's see. Oh, shoot. Well, I'm going to leave it open. Hopefully he comes back. I thought he was terrific. We were wrapping up anyway. That was the last question I really wanted to talk to him about. I hate that we lost him. He must have had an internet failure or a battery failure. But everybody, I so appreciate you guys being here. I know it was a long day. Philip is just so intelligent. Oh my gosh, he broke it down so great. I think we're both of the same opinion that they're, what they have to say is coming in. I'm hoping that that second report that's due by May 7th doesn't come in, but I think she'll probably give him that. That's why she said, can you get it done by May 7th? He said, yes, Your Honor, I can. I think it's all coming in. I think because I speak from the federal perspective, and I just want to thank Rose so much. Thank you so much for that. That's so sweet. You know, I speak from the federal perspective, and boy, you, with the judges that I was before, if a witness or somebody had done anything like this, I mean, beguiled the court, said that they, you know, never spoke to a witness. I've had judges just lean over and say, ask them pointed questions. You just don't get over like this. And I think that that's why I remain so incensed about this case with everything we've seen from the witness harassment, from what's happened with intimidating the witnesses, from this well-oiled machine, as I see it, to have a propaganda machine, I'll call it, to try to sway jurors that could be in the jury pool. I mean, that's exactly what they say. I've posted those clips often about it. And I tell you what, I just, this case just makes me upset from that standpoint, because I see justice not, things not being done as I've always seen it in so many years. Basically, what I think many screamed about initially was worried about public corruption in Massachusetts. And certainly we see that in Stoughton and what happened in the Sandra Birchmore case. Hands down, I was screaming about that forever, and many people were. But that is not this case. And what we've seen really is the tawdry, hinky lack of candor, which the court found, by the way, issues. That is definitely happening in this case. But to me, it's by the defense arena. And it's just hard to see. I've only really dealt with, for the most part, amazing defense attorneys, amazing public defenders that I just think so much of. And so anyway, I really appreciate everyone being here. Thank you again so much, Rosa. I'm hoping you're a member. It's only like $1 a month. You're just so awesome. Let me see. The witness harassment and intimidation has been awful. I can't agree with you more on that, Rosa. Couple of more things I just wanted to put up here so people can see. Yeah, I agree. Won't limit anything. I agree. I bet AJ has used that Signal app on many cases. Yeah, it's about integrity. And I think we're getting a true picture of him. Everyone, thank you so very much. And I appreciate all of you. And until the next time, may justice be served.
Seconds. That's the difference between life and death. I've seen it firsthand. I'm Javed Abdelmonem, a doctor with Médecins Sans Frontières. As conflicts continue to spread across the world, it's crucial we can act fast. As an MSF doctor, I may need to stop life-threatening bleeding, treat gunshot wounds, or care for blast victims, all in a matter of seconds. That's why at Médecins Sans Frontières, we don't waste any time. We're working in more conflict zones than you may be aware of, giving everything to give people a chance. Just £30 will keep our life-saving work going. Please help us save more lives. Because with trauma care, every second counts. You can buy us vital time. Please give just £30. Search MSF Doctor or call 0800 055 7979. That's 0800 055 7979. Thank you.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Do you love true crime podcasts and true crime documentaries?
If so, you gotta check out our podcast, True Crime Obsessed, where we recap the true crime documentaries everybody's watching.
We say everything you're thinking and probably screaming at your TV.
We've been at the top of the podcast charts for almost 9 years, and we have over 400 episodes for you to check out right now.
We cover the cases everyone's talking about, and we also highlight the cases that have been underreported, overlooked, or forgotten.
With over 30,000 five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, if you've never checked out True Crime Obsessed, now's the time to give us a try.
Find True Crime Obsessed wherever you get your podcasts.